reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "Beware that your hearts do not become drowsy from carousing and drunkenness and the anxieties of daily life, and that day catch you by surprise like a trap. For that day will assault everyone who lives on the face of the earth. Be vigilant at all times and pray that you have the strength to escape the tribulations that are imminent and to stand before the Son of Man." The Gospel of the Lord. The first reading, the prophet Daniel has a vision of the 3.5 years in which the fourth beast will dominate the earth. But then afterward, the court will be convened, the power taken away, the kingship and dominion and majesty of all the kingdoms under heaven shall be given to the holy people of the Most High, whose kingdom will be everlasting, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. We are in those 3.5 years, which, just like the 7 days of creation doesn't mean 24-hour periods, so these 3.5 years don't mean 365 calendar years. It means a phase in time, but that phase will pass. But during this time, what Jesus had said elsewhere is going to come true. People will hate us on account of his name. People will persecute us. People will revile us. They'll even try to kill us on account of our fidelity to him. That we've got to be ready for. Might not be in the very ways that Christians in Baghdad are being slaughtered at mass, or Christians in the Sudan are being slaughtered as they pray the rosary on their way to church. May not happen by our being imprisoned for 20 years with people forgetting about us in communist China if we're a member of the underground church. May be that we need to lose our job because we don't sanction gay marriage. It may be that we're persecuted by family members who think that we're holier than thou. It may be because we're a priest and we get on an elevator and somebody calls us a child molester who's never even met us before. But it's real and we have to face it, knowing that that's the reality until the parousia, until Christ comes again at a second coming. How are we supposed to live in this time? Jesus gives us very clearly two imperatives in the gospel. First, be vigilant at all times. Don't fall asleep through carousing and drunkenness and the anxieties of life. It's easy for us to think we can fall asleep through carousing and drunkenness when we literally sort of lose our attachment to reality. But we can also lose our contact with reality through the anxieties of daily life, when through the pressures that come on up, maybe we're unemployed, maybe we've got a physical illness, maybe someone we care about is suffering. Those types of anxieties can also blind us to the real, real world, which is precisely the world in which God exists. We can all be forgetful of that reality. Jesus tells us don't. The opposite of that is to be vigilant, to constantly be on the lookout for the presence of the Lord in every circumstance. That's imperative number one, constant presence of God. And then second, not just to be aware that God is present, but then to enter into that loving dialogue, which is supposed to be the Christian life, to pray, to listen to the Lord, which is the first act of prayer, and then to respond to the Lord, not just with our lips or with our mind, but also with our actions, with fruit. These are the two verbs. Then he says the context, be vigilant at all times and pray that you may have the strength to escape the tribulations that are imminent. They're going to try to drag us down when the persecutions come, when the various prophecies he describes, when the armies are at the gate, when there are earthquakes and hurricanes and other types of storms. We are tempted to lose our focus that God is still present with us in the midst of the storm. Be vigilant at all times and pray that you have the strength to escape the tribulations that are imminent and to stand before the Son of Man. It's a beautiful last expression to finish our liturgical year, to stand before the Son of Man, that the Son of Man is before us. And we shouldn't be cowering, rolling around, trying to pretend as if he doesn't see us. But out of real reverence, to stand. You know, I try to smash a lot of the vestiges of clericalism because I think the long-term harm outweighs the good. And there are lots of privileges that are given. A priest walks into a restaurant and all of a sudden a Catholic maitre d', even though there are 50 couples waiting, tries to put the priest at the front of the line. He's trying to be kind to the priest, and I appreciate his good gesture, but then I get 50 couples hating every priest who has ever lived. And so you say, no, I'm very patient. Thank you very much for your kindness. I'm happy to wait just like everybody else. I try to smash those vestiges of clericalism. There's one exception, though. When I used to walk, and still occasionally I go out to teach in Catholic schools, when I walk into that classroom and the kids stand, it is the one that I allow. Why? Because it's a sign of respect we're teaching to a young generation. It's a respect not merely for the priest as Roger Landry, but the priest as ambassador of Christ coming into that classroom, that we stand with respect and with reverence before someone who at least has a holy office and is called to correspond to that holy office. When we start talking about standing before the Son of Man, that's why we stand at the gospel. Because he's speaking. It's not just to get blood flowing through our arteries and veins. He's speaking. And the Lord wants us constantly to be standing in his presence. It's a beautiful part in Eucharistic prayer number 2, which we will say for the last time today in the old translation, because it's not going to be translated in the same way because of liturgical abuses in other countries. The Latin is "Astare coram te," to stand before you, Lord. It's going to change it because in other places they don't want to kneel during the Eucharistic prayer. They want to stand, even though the rubrics say we're supposed to kneel, so it doesn't want to say stand any longer because the people have misunderstood what it means as priests have tried to do their own thing rather than being obedient. So we'll lose that sense. But it's here when we come to meet the Lord that we're called to stand with reverence, whether we're kneeling or whether we're sitting, but we're supposed to, in fact, have that reverence totally inundate us. Because God is present, to recognize and be vigilant for his presence. And then second, to enter into that loving dialogue happens when at every moment we recognize that Jesus isn't coming into the classroom, that Jesus isn't coming into our bedroom, that Jesus isn't coming into our workplace, that Jesus isn't coming into our rectory or convent, but that Jesus is there, dynamically there, turning to us and saying, follow me. We can't follow him unless we're first standing. Today, as we come forward, we turn to Our Lady, who's always standing, attentive for the Lord's presence, always overshadowed by the Holy Spirit, always saying her fiat, even when that fiat led to the earthquake that came after her son breathed his last on Calvary. But she was there, standing at the foot of the cross, a model of this type of vigilance, courage, perseverance, and prayer. There's a Bolivian mystic whose visions during the Mass are very moving. We don't have to believe them as Catholics, but I think they're absolutely true. When she attends Mass, she sees almost all the saints and the angels behind the priest who looks exactly like Jesus Christ. And behind the altar are all the pre-saints. The female saints, the non-priest saints, the lay saints are all over the church. But behind the altar are all the priest saints. And there's one woman there, standing at her son's right side in the person of the bridegroom, Christ. And I don't need to tell you who that woman is. She's standing here now, showing us the example of how to recognize her son's presence and to enter into that dialogue of life.